good girl. Love the mess, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
And this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Doubter 5, and on the line we have Wombat.
The Wombat!
Very good.
Hey, what's up?
Welcome back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just wrong. There are several...
You're not alone.
There are several atheist and rationalist groups here in Knoxville, and we'll tell you after the break, in the mid-program break, how you can connect with them. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
Absolutely. Let me tell you something. I have been all over this. You cannot understand how hyped I am for the last episode of this thing coming on. I thought they couldn't top it when they had the Dragon Lady come in, but there's the ice zombies, and then there's
zombies?
Like this really evil queen that they're trying to take down.
I don't think you're thinking about the right show.
I can't get enough of it.
That's a different show. I'm talking about the Atheist Call-In television show broadcasting here in Knoxville that's been broadcasting for 7 years. Matter of fact, next Tuesday is our 7-year anniversary. And we'll tell you how you can listen to that, too, a little bit later on in the show. And in spite of what you may have heard from Steve Martin, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there. And you'll be hearing them right here on this program and generally in this station as they are in rotation. A lot of people ask me, though, how can they listen to this radio show if they don't catch it live? And it's true. You can go to digitalfreethought.com, click on the blog button, and then on the next screen look for podcasts, because we have been making podcasts out of these programs and been doing that for quite a while now. There are like 67 shows out there. So if you like this show and you want to hear more about them, load them up on your iPhone and listen to them in the car. I guess that today's topic has been on everybody's mind pretty much all over the United States for the last week, 2 weeks. And that's the eclipse. You want to talk about that a little bit, Wombat?
Are you sure you don't want to talk about the ice dragon that showed up?
I don't know about the ice dragon. I'm probably the only person in America that doesn't watch any shows with ice dragons in them.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, well, if you want to talk about the second biggest story of the week.
Yeah, right.
We had this thing that happened in the sky, and it was a cool shared experience all across America. Some great, great, great pictures of it are up. But basically what we had was a solar eclipse.
A total
solar eclipse, not just like any... Well, I mean, in your neck of the woods, I think you had complete totality,
right?
We did.
I went down to Sweetwater, and it was total down there for about 2.5 minutes. I understand that they did get some total here in, like, Maryville and in Farragut. They got some of the totality here, which was pretty cool.
Oh, it was great. Where I was working at, we all had our, safety glasses on, and we were looking at it. And we saw maybe about 95% coverage, and even that was pretty cool. You don't have glasses on before you see it.
Yeah.
It got dark. It got a lot cooler than we expected. Not as dark as, say, it would be in your neck of the woods, but, man, that was an amazing event.
Yeah.
And you want to know what's really cool?
What?
We all knew, even from the day that we were driving to work, even from the time that we were working, even from the time that we were, like, having our lunch and planning everything, almost the exact moment that we would be able to see the complete total, or at least our maximal amount of coverage,
sure,
and that eclipse.
And we've known it for months.
We knew it as what?
We've known it for months.
Yeah, we knew it for quite some time. This wasn't a new data point that just came out. And it wasn't, revised multiple times leading up to the event, at least as far as, the last couple of years. In fact, we have the next one planned 7 years from now, and we have a exact date for that as well.
2024.
I got to tell you, it's pretty good to have a model that's so good at predicting things in the future. We could even call it a prophecy.
Well, I doubt that.
You typically need a prophesizer or what is the name of a person who prophesizes stuff?
You need a prophet.
You need a prophet to have a prophecy, and in science there's typically not a lot of prophets. But there are a lot of scientists who are capable of using a very reliable model to come up with some pretty good estimates of when things will happen and how they happen.
Yeah, they don't call it prophecy, though. They call it predictions, and they're pretty spot on about
that. It's pretty good. Yeah. I got to say, I'm really, really proud of, all of the science guys, folks at NASA who are around our area helping some of my colleagues find areas that are in the exact area of complete coverage, and even having, camp-out sites nearby, because there's a lot of personal property around here of farmland. They actually hired out, NASA came down to Kentucky area near Hopkinsville, had an area that they bought basically for just a brief period of time, or renting the period. They had some observatory equipment with them, and they allowed other people to come and pack nearby their site as well. And they had a great time just basically enjoying a great phenomenon that was accurately predicted by science and so well done at that. Too, just down to the exact minute. Yeah. And I guess what I wanted to talk about today is the comparison of a scientific prophecy. And I'm using the word loosely in that sense, because, like I said, you need to have a prophet to have a prophecy. There's not really some prophets in science. There's just guys who do work at using the scientific method or in developing pretty accurate results about the world around us. And then, but where you do have prophets is in the land of spirituality, religion itself. And when you have a prophecy that's presented by religion versus, I guess, a prophecy, quotation marks, presented by science, how do those two compare, both in their accuracy, both in their testability, both in how specific, exactly, detailed. Details are important. Yeah. How detailed can you get? Uh-huh. And basically the overall importance of what they're able to determine. Because if they're telling us something that isn't particularly important, why do we care?
Right.
I want to talk about that. Where do you want to get started? I can talk about this for hours.
Well, we can talk about Nostradamus and some of those people, the prophets of the Bible. But generally what they do, they get very, very vague. You know, a city sometime in the future will experience a plague. You know, that type of thing that, you know.
A plague?
Yeah, if you wait long enough, a city somewhere in the world will have a plague. And, you know, you say, ooh, that guy knew. No, he didn't. He just bet in the odds. But what's
fun? You're basically saying that a person can make a bet and then wait without any time period. Wait for it to come true. And then it's I knew that. That's the thing I said.
Yeah, well, if they make a very general bet. They can't make specifics like name a city, name a year and a date, you know, and then tell us what's going to happen. Like in a city called New York, there will be two towers brought down and the number is 9/11/2017 or 2001 will be very, front and center.
They don't tend to be, how do I put it? They don't tend to be as clear as they are until after the fact, where people start to may perhaps pull apart the clues and say, well, you know, he said this letter twice, and if you multiply that by four, and then you add one, then you get, something pretty close to the square root of 9/11. Therefore, he meant 9/11 entire time.
Sure.
I'm like, you'll get stuff like that. What it benefits is clarity. How about that? It benefits if the thing that you're trying to prophesize is a clear statement, particularly one that's specific. But a worthwhile prophecy is one that I can say
here, this is going to happen at this point in time, and this, there's no other way to misinterpret it, because I'm saying it's going to happen in exactly this clear, concise manner.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really cool thing if that thing actually happens, because that would give me more confidence that the person who repeatedly is right with a clear statement is a better source to rely on than someone who gives me a vague statement with no time period. And even if it does happen, I have to backwards interpret how that came to be.
Yeah.
Nostradamus, in particular, gave a lot. He's really famous for a lot of prophecies that he gave. Mm-hmm. Most of them haven't come true yet, but he did give a lot of them. Some of them are completely wrong, but he's a quantity over quality kind of figure.
Sure, and so is Pat Robertson.
I guess you could say
Pat Robinson does that a lot. He gives like, you know, 100 different predictions every year, and then he claims a couple of them at the end of the year. And they see,
yeah,
I
but
it.
That's quite high praise to call him a prophet, though. He's just an old man on TV for the most part.
Yeah, crazy old man on TV. Yeah.
Yeah, but let's make sure we're doing this even handedly. You know, the weather report often tells us, you know, hey, there's going to be a 50% chance rain today. What do you mean? What do you mean 50% chance? Does that mean if it rained, you were right, or if it didn't rain, you were right? Like, how am I supposed to interpret that data? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. Well, I jokingly tell people when they move to Knoxville, if they call for 50% chance of rain, it means it's going to rain 50% of the time. Because we always get rain when they call for rain. But the thing about it is, a person who's behind a microphone or in front of a camera saying, you know, the Knoxville area has 50% chance of rain, well, he's got a big area, and there pop up showers all over the place. You have a 50% chance of falling underneath one of those clouds that happen to be raining in that area.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what it is. The 50% chance isn't a recommendation of what you're going to get. It's a recommendation for what the area is going to get and your chance of experiencing that form of precipitation.
Yeah.
So, like, if it says, hey, there's an 80% chance of rain, you may not even see a drop that entire day.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee you, if there are enough friends of yours spread out across a particular area that they gave that forecast in, around 80% of them are going to say, yeah, we saw rain today. And that is one of the cool correlating parts of a scientific prophecy. Yeah. And again, I'm using prophecy in quotes here. Because I have a means of demonstrating, or I have a means of testing whether it's accurate or not in a more immediate fashion, because I'm given a clear, a clear parameter set of what makes it right, what makes it accurate, or what makes it not accurate.
Uh-huh.
If I'm given a 50% chance of rain today and it turns out it rains literally everywhere in my area, mm-hmm. I can say for a fact, hey, this was wrong because you said 50%, but literally it rained everywhere and that's 100% chance of rain.
Right.
And like, okay, absolutely correct. Our model may have been off. We're willing to adjust it. We're willing to get better at it.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully be more accurate the next day. And thank you very much for that information.
Wow.
That would be the typical scientific response to a presentation of their model being wrong, an effort towards making it better. But when you have something in religion saying, for example, you know, Jesus said to his own followers that they would see him again in their lifetime before it's all said and done, like the end of the world was literally going to happen
before that generation passed.
Yeah, and as far as I'm aware, we're still around kicking and having a good time. Oh, but you know, he meant generation as in the as long as you believe in Jesus Christ,
right.
We are going to see his kingdom come as
believers
within his work.
The apologists at work.
It's an apologetic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for the most part, I'm not particularly convinced in the backtracking or the post-hoc reconciliations of, you know, prophecies that have been shown to be wrong, except that it's not accurate, and be willing to change it for the better. But don't continue to assert that any criticism for that prophecy is in itself not valid, when it very much so is. Particularly when, if your claim is the end of the world is going to happen and we're still around, clearly there's something wrong there. If God says, hey, I'm making a statement here, I'm never going to flood the world again, I'm never going to cause a lot of damage, that was pretty bad, here's a rainbow to prove it. And as scientists, we can say, well, here's a lot of instances of people being flooded in like entire islands and ran devastation in like Haiti, or floods that happened in Tibet, floods that happened in Japan. Oh, well, that's not the whole world. It's like, okay, so is that a real, is that some sort of like conciliation or apologetic excuse that allows for the grand amount of people being drowned to death and property damage upwards to the point where these people will never be at the same level as they ever will be again on the same time scale? They've been thrown back generations in terms of finances and loss of their family members. So it's a weird thing to have prophecies that can wiggle out of confidence statements.
Yeah. Well, it's not one. It's really a kudo for science that when they say, you know, it comes on the radio, you know, a month from now on the 21st of August, there's going to be a total eclipse and it will be in the area of so-and-so. And most people, even very religious people who believe in prophecy and all that, you go, huh, I'll have to see that. They don't think twice about it. They trust in science at a level that is subconscious. And when the thing happens and they actually plan trips, you know, they go. I've had a lot of people. We were down at Spring Sweetwater, and there were people there from Michigan and from Chicago area and up from Florida. And nobody questioned that it was going to happen. They knew it was going to happen. Science says it was going to happen. So, you know, they went there. They depended on it, and they were paid off in spades. So that's kudos for science.
And in my mind, I think what their impression is that science is great. Science is absolutely accurate, but that their faith is just as accurate as science.
Yeah,
they're not trying to say, "Hey, religion is one thing and science is another thing." And they're
but the
saying.
Thing
they're
is,
saying,
it's just a natural occurrence. I mean, the sun just the moon happens to be coming between the Earth and the sun. But then they will say, "Yeah, but that's an omen." It was an omen. It was destined to be, you know, for millennia that on this particular date at that particular location, the moon is going to be in front of the sun. They say, oh, it's an omen. You know, Trump needs to be in the White House or something like that. And it's just silly. It's an omen. There's a thing on the internet. I guess you saw it. You know, if you want us to, what is it? Impeach Trump. Give us some kind of sign, like blot out the sun or something, within the next week.
And hey, we get it. Hey, look, it's hard to be impartial to things like this, but you know, there are people that, how do I put it? There's religions out there that would full-heartedly see an eclipse. And back in the past, would be like, oh, I guess we have to kill all the virgins today.
We should not hold that battle tomorrow.
Time to sacrifice some goats. Make sure that doesn't happen. Or a big god in the sky is angry. Yeah. Time to burn all of our crops and start all over again. Uh-huh. Who cares if we starve? Clearly, it's everything's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But we know better now. We learn better now. We have a better understanding. And we don't really have religion to thank for that. We have our scientific understanding of how the world works to thank for.
Right.
We have a better appreciation for evidence-based tests and beliefs rather than ones held on conviction. And it's something that's completely transformed our society, whether we're willing to admit it or not. It's taken a while, and it's happened subtly, but we've moved a great deal in, say, the last 100 to 200 years, even if you were based on wherever you are. Well, we're now, you know, here holding our smartphones with insane amount of technology, uploading videos to the internet wirelessly of an eclipse that was predicted to the very minute with science, and then going back home and reading our holy books before we go to sleep.
Right.
That's
trying to interpret it.
That's essentially the culture we live in.
Yeah.
But we talked about cognitive dissonance before. Uh-huh. But the issue isn't so much like, well, I was a scientist then, but now I'm a religious person now. Their impression is that their faith is just as reliable as a method to determine true things as science is just as reliable.
Well, that's patently false.
Reliably capable of determining true things. Or things that are about to happen.
Well, the thing about faith is you can believe anything that you want to. And every religion in the world uses faith to believe that what their holy book says is true. I mean, the holy men will tell you, just use faith, you know, and have faith in your holy book, and everything in it is true. And, it, you know, how many times have you heard somebody say, you know, it's true for me? Well, it's either true or it's not. You know, it's objectively true or it's not.
And, you know, a lot of people don't like it when you say that, but just because you don't, here's another part I want to bring up. Just because you don't like something or just because something's told to you in a way you can't find palatable doesn't make it not true.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there was a guy named Bill Nye, the science guy.
Right.
I love this guy. Thanked him in my thesis. I am crazy about this dude. He came to our college. I freaked out. Everyone else within the podcast is freaking out. It was a freak out moment of one singularity of connectedness. He was so great. But he has a new show. It's on HBO. And his topics tend to range from both the science to more political. And he's definitely pushing more of a greenhouse issues. He's pushing more global warming. He's pushing more acceptance of, like, different people with gender identities.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to talk a little bit about the science behind that, how someone could feel like they're born not feeling like the sexual identity that they've been given at birth. And he's trying to describe these things. But, you know, even at my own job, when I bring up Bill Nye the Science Guy, or when they bring up Bill Nye the Science Guy, it's done kind of like with this disgust, a little bit of, like, distaste, where it's like, you know, Bill Nye, I like them, but he goes to the Ken Ham Ark Museum, and he's all like, yeah, dinosaurs and humans don't never live with each other. This is wrong. And
that's
I'm
true.
Like, you could have found a nicer way to say, he's so smarmy. I really don't like him. He's getting so political. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I got to tell you, I bite my lips so hard sometimes at my job. I'm just like, come on, guys. We're scientists here, but, you know, a lot of the guys were hired locally, and I don't blame for it, but it's just a result of, you know, you're born believing what you're being told,
and
so you have a chance to, like, really question it.
And a lot of it may be homeschooling. You know, you learn nothing but the Bible at home, and you're not going to have the information that you need to be able to comprehend what's going on in the world. What was it? Dawkins says that the problem that he has with religion is it teaches you to be satisfied with non-answers about the world. In other words,
That's such a great statement.
Right. And
it teaches you to be satisfied with non-answers.
Right.
Isn't that great?
And to not question.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. No. Getting back to the Bible, you know, we're talking about prophecy and the predictions. A lot of people will point to the Bible and say, look at all the stuff in the New Testament that was predicted in the Old Testament, you know, Christ and Jesus and all this stuff, and the Virgin Mary. The thing about it is, the people who wrote the New Testament had the Old Testament at their hand, at their elbow. They could have written anything that they wanted to fulfill any prophecy that's in the Old Testament.
Sure, and that's just the newest version of the Old Testament that actually got popular. There were several other books that weren't necessarily incorporated into the book when Catholicism really took its lease or took its grip at our cultural cognizance. But just to finish one last point, Bill Nye the Science Guy, you know, just because people find him smarmy, just because people don't like him, doesn't necessarily mean that he's not making a point. And you can't assess that strictly by feelings.
Yeah.
You can't assess what he says by faith or whether it disagrees with what you're being taught when you're
basically,
you gotta use evidence.
It's basically an ad hominem attack. You know, he can't be right. Look how smarmy he is. You know, or how could he know what he's talking about? He's ugly. You know, ad hominem. It has no bearing. It's a fallacy.
That's
it has
exactly
no bearing on the truth of what the person is talking about or saying.
Right. And I think if he were to make a prediction, it doesn't matter how smarmy or how much of a terrible person he was, if it's right, if it's accurate, it's accurate.
Demonstrable.
I just had a conversation with someone today where we were talking about, like, there was someone who was pretty demeaning on the news, but was saying the true things on the news. And I was basically saying it's pretty valuable to have someone tell you something that's truthful and factual on the news, regardless of whether it's demeaning or not. A demeaning true opinion is just as valuable as a true opinion. I would rather have a bunch of demeaning truths than a falsehood that appeals to my sentiments.
Yeah,
and
it flatters you.
Between those two, I would rather have, disgusting truths than delicious lies to live off of, especially if I care about being truthful in my own actions and beliefs.
Yes.
If I value the truth, I want the truth regardless of how it's given to me.
Dare I say an inconvenient truth?
It's true. Yeah. But I really want to get more into prophecies. I got a whole list of them that I had from some of the interviews that I did last couple of weeks. And if you want to get into the second half, I'm totally cool with it. Sure. What about you? How do you think?
That's fine. Do you want to name a song? Do you have a favorite song you let me play? A favorite atheist song?
Let's see. Do you have that Neil deGrasse Tyson one?
Oh, I don't know. What's it called?
Cosmos?
Oh, I do have several. Let's see. No, it's not showing me any Tysons, unless it's spelled different with T-Y-S-E-N, T-Y-S-O-N.
Sure, well, try it and see if it happens.
I'll just try Cosmos.
And we'll come back in the second half.
Yeah, I've got one that's a symphony of science called Our Place in the Cosmos. I don't know if he's on it.
Cool.
But we can try that.
It should be it.
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments, what is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective.
The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery.
As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
As the ancient mythmakers knew, we're children equally of the earth and the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired passion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence. The clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments, what is our place in the cosmic perspective of life?
We could be in the middle of an intergalactic conversation, and we wouldn't even know. Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
We've begun at last to wonder about our origins, star stuff, contemplating the stars, tracing that long path. Our obligation to survive and flourish is owed not just to ourselves, but also to that cosmos, ancient and vast, from which we spring.
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Think of how many stars, planets, and kinds of life there may be in this vast heaven.
awesome universe.
With every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is WOZO, that's O-Z-O, W-O-Z-O, I'll say it right in a minute. Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a live atheist call-in television radio show. And I'm Dieter Five, and we have Wombat on the phone. Hello, Wombat.
The Wombat's here. What's up? How you doing?
Doing fine. I got to tell everybody about the atheist groups that are here in Knoxville, the free thought groups. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002 by yours truly. November marks our 15th year. We now have over 700 Whoa. Members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com and look for Knoxville Atheist there. It's just that simple. Also, you can join us in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near West Town Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Dillahunty. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has a bi-weekly presentation and discussions held at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building, Cafeteria Annex, and if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalists.org. Then click on upcoming events and follow the signs once you get on campus. There's also a Sunday Assembly, which is a no-God church setting for those who have had enough of religion and no longer believe, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, however, and that's on the fourth Sunday, downtown in the International Building near the fairgrounds. That's a Sunday Assembly, if you want to Google it. There's also the Secular Student Alliance. Now, the school has started back in college and high schools all around the world. The Secular Student Alliance may be something you wanted to Google on that front. They have programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college students who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs...
There's so many great options.
Yeah. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Finally, there's a newcomer to the free thought groups in Knoxville.
Wait, hold on, Doubter 5.
Yeah.
Doubter 5. I'm just saying there's a great number of options, but if only there was some sort of, like, place where I can meet people in, like, a singles format. I'm just saying I'm lonely. I need help. You got anything like that for me?
Yeah, we do. Would you like to meet people over drinks and food, or would you like to meet them?
Yes, and I want to talk about ice dragons. That's all I want. I just need someone out there who's willing to have that conversation with
then
me.
You'd probably want to look up the Atheist Society of Knoxville and get together on the Tuesday night meetup at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near West Town Mall. And that's every Tuesday around happy hour, 5:30 till about 8. And we usually get anywhere from 20 to 30 people down there, so it's not going to be just you and two other geeky atheists. It's going to be a bunch of people, young, old, men and women, and families, full families come down. Let's see. There is also the the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Those nice people up there in Wisconsin who have been staunchly defending the church, the wall between church and state, have now got a new chapter here in Knoxville, Tennessee. That's the Freedom From Religion East Tennessee chapter. And they get together like once a month, like the second Wednesday, I think, out at Earth Fair on Turkey Creek. So do a search for the Freedom From Religion Foundation East Tennessee chapter. And, we didn't talk about the TV show. I told you earlier that there was an atheist call-in TV show and has been for 7 years here in Knoxville. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can find it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. It's on public access TV, so just look for that station, that channel. You can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org or on Comcast Channel 12. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just search for three words on YouTube, Free Thought Forum Knoxville, and you'll come up with 7 years worth of shows. And if you're interested in getting involved in the TV or radio show, just come to an Ask or RET meetup and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And as we said in the break, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 here in Knoxville, and join the conversation. And Wombat, getting back to your topic, where did you want to go with it?
Okay, so what did we talk about so far? Basically, prophecy, that there are such things that are prophesied, yep, in a lot of holy books, prophesied a lot of holy books by prophets,
uh-huh.
And then things that are predicted through scientific methods and through analysis. One tends to be beliefs, or one set of predictions tends to be supported through beliefs and conviction, tend to be pretty vague, also tend to be very broad without very clear parameters for figuring out whether or not they're right or wrong. And even when they're shown to be absolutely wrong, can be wiggled out of through a post ad hoc rationalization, or mm-hmm. an apologetic tactic, mm-hmm. where it's basically, no, you didn't interpret it right. The prediction's still correct. You're just interpreting it wrong
right.
after the
mm-hmm.
fact.
Sure.
Whereas the other method, the scientific one, tends to be more exact, tends to be more clear, tends to have very defined parameters of this is what it'll look like when it's right. And if it's wrong, let us know, because we're trying to get better at predicting this in the future.
Right.
And as a result, can get so meticulously on point with its predictions that it's capable of, for every single person, every single state, every single minute of the day, predict where an eclipse will be in its complete totality across the entire nation of the United States years ahead of time,
yeah.
possibly even decades.
Yep.
In fact, as I said, we've already got the one in the next 7 years planned and mapped out. That is, and it's to the point where we're so confident in it that we don't really question it. Like,
right.
In the news,
right.
there was never a story of, I don't think this eclipse thing is going to happen.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm not too sure about this. Are you? Eclipse.
Uh-huh.
101 reasons why science will completely yeah. be wrong about this uh-huh. prediction. You never see that. There's an absolute confidence, not an absolute, I shouldn't say that, but there is an inordinate amount of confidence in both religious and non-religious people in the prediction of science in order to get this eclipse accurate.
Yeah. Well, there's also an implied acceptance of science, too. I mean, you ever get in your car and drive somewhere using your GPS? Well, those are made possible by using the theory of relativity, and that's science. I mean, there's science not only goes into the manufacture of your iPhone or your GPS unit, but the satellites are if they didn't take into consideration the theory of relativity as they go around the Earth, they would be off, you know, by a matter of yards in just a few seconds. So they have to constantly readjust it because the time on the satellite is different than the time on Earth because they are moving. It's relative. And all of that is science and has to be taken into account.
Okay. That's really cool. I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you have a point. Yeah, in terms of the theory of relativity being that, you know, because objects are moving at different speeds, they're experiencing time differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as a result, in order to get accurate assessments between two different moving objects at different speeds,
mm-hmm.
you have to do some sort of telemetry on that.
Right.
And it's kind of cool that you can do that instantaneously and get really good results each and every single time, to the point where mm-hmm. I can get in the car, pop in the address, be at your front door in
mm-hmm.
a predicted time
right, right.
through traffic and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really great.
Yeah.
But again, like, we have this really, and all of that's based on evidence, and all of that is subject for critique, fair critique, and basically a process of getting more accurate over time. And I imagine 20 years from now, all the technology that we're relying on right now in some form or another will completely evolve into a brand new thing that will make what we're using right now completely seem archaic and outdated in comparison.
The new science will be like magic.
But we'd still have the same prophecies from our holy books. I don't imagine those things would change.
Yeah, the books don't change.
In fact, they've been the same ones we've had
for
the last 2,000 years, at least as far as Christianity is concerned.
Yeah, and one of the big problems, or at least one of the big complaints I have, or I keep hearing from religious people about science, is how can you trust science? It keeps changing. Now, the thing about it is, if you were doing something wrong, wouldn't you want to know about it, and wouldn't you change? You know, they get better readings, better experiments, and they adjust their findings because of the new information that they have. Unlike religion, which ignores a lot of new information just to be able to keep saying the same old thing, they don't allow for change.
And you know what else changes every second of the day?
What?
Your watch.
Yeah,
that's true.
And it still
gives a pretty accurate estimate of what the time is.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, sometimes the way how things change gives us information, too, because things don't always tend to stay the same. We, for example, have realized that human beings are just as subject to changes over, you know, replicate generations as animals or livestock or even our crops. And because of that, we were able to develop better medicine because we didn't always have antibiotics that we have today. We didn't always have means of exploring the human body and understanding what kind of elements are related to certain kind of physical features in our body.
Right.
And because of that, our surgeries have gotten better, but we also know of different kinds of body types and how to compensate for that. So I wouldn't necessarily take one kidney that I got from you and put it in some random person. I would assess their blood because I know certain people have different kinds of blood. And in a perfect world that was intelligently designed, there was a God that cared about every single human being on the planet, he would have it so that everyone had the same blood type, so that it's just easy for donors to pass, you know, organs back and forth.
We would have interchangeable parts.
Yeah, but unfortunately we don't have that.
We don't.
And science had to pick up the pieces.
Uh-huh.
You know,
but
like we have
make
to do
it happen. Yeah, science makes it happen.
Right. And we had to ask some uncomfortable questions about human physiology in terms of why isn't it ideal and perfect if we're supposed to be ideal and perfect? Why do we have all these as unnecessary body parts? Why do we have all these things that seem to be going bad very common, very regularly, and we need to have means of fixing them in due time, such as eyesight, heart palpitations, stress leading to a variety of different kinds of diagnoses, cancer that comes in many different kinds of ambiguous forms.
Uh-huh.
All of these are things that not only can science predict to a pretty good point when they might happen or what your likelihood of getting them is, which is great, but we also, because we have that information, are still able to develop procedures to hopefully treat them to the point where we don't have to worry about them anymore. We're coming into this new renaissance of mankind where we have this amazing new technology that gets better every day, but yet we still have this reliance on spirituality and prophecy from them.
And a lot of time that trumps science, too, to the detriment of the humans. Like us, Christian scientists don't believe in blood transfusions or going to the doctor when they're sick, and their children pay the price for that. How many times, a year do we hear of religious people not taking their child to a doctor and just praying instead and the child dies? The state has been starting to prosecute those parents for manslaughter in cases like that.
I know.
Especially when the cure was simple and easy and all they had to do is just go get it. But they refused.
But I guess in a less... So people who might hear that think, well, I will never let my son or daughter get lack of treatment because of my religious beliefs.
Uh-huh.
But they may not realize that they're probably doing something just as innocuously harmful. Or,
like banning their homosexual child from their house.
Oh, well, yeah,
you know,
that's
something like
that's
that.
A huge
throwing
one.
Him out in the cold and
well, my kid's not gay. He would never be gay
shelter.
Because we all know gays being bad. Meanwhile, the kid's like, yeah, I guess I'm not gay. I totally like women. This is going to be a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Or you can lie to all your loved ones and live a lie.
Yeah. Or how about this? Just denying their kid a chance to have a healthy education that's capable of interpreting a lot of different kinds of perspectives and not having any baggage when it comes to trying to get the most honest perspective about how the universe works. I know I believed in God until I was already in college, and this wasn't like a switch that happened.
Yeah,
this was
too.
A struggle to like get rid of the beliefs that I had when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
I believed in a Satan and a hell and a heaven, all this stuff, including a God that I could have a personal relationship
with. Well,
Wombat,
what happened? What happened?
Oh, so like I said, when I'm in college, I went through like this period where I decided, you know, I need this Bible because I'm feeling like I wasn't able to go to church because I was busy in school. I want to read this Bible, but I'm not feeling like I'm getting spiritually fulfilled. And I'm also beginning to feel like I'm critical of some of the things that are happening in it. Like the Goliath David story, for example.
Uh-huh.
Here you have what's sold to you as an underdog tale where David is like trying to come over this giant
uh-huh.
with a sword, and he beats them and everyone's happy. But then you think, look, this guy had the giant dude has a lot of muscles, but he was fighting at a distance and he only had a melee weapon.
Right.
And the other guy had an artillery thing that was basically the equivalent of a gun.
Yeah.
Plus, if I really believe this, like if this was 100% me being in faith with this story, he had an entire God on his side, and not just any God, the God. The God that created the entire universe was literally on this side of this guy versus this one poor dude with a sword, and I'm supposed to think David's the underdog in the story? No. And I'm beginning to feel like these are just little small hiccups, and they eventually added up to the point where I wanted to have better answers for the things that I believe in, and not just suffice myself with an answer. I wanted to have an explanation, not just a response. And in the search of doing that, I realized that I didn't have good reasons for the things that I believe in. I wanted to have better ones. And in the process of that, I realized I didn't have them yet, so that the best answer I could come up with with regard to whether or not a God did exist or whether whether the Christian God exists was, I don't know for sure. I don't know. And if I don't know for sure, and if I'm absolutely not confident on that, then I would be more honest with myself if I just withheld belief until I had good evidence.
Right.
And I've not gotten good evidence yet, but that's still my position.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm saying if there's a time where a God wants to present himself and say, hey, I'm God, by the way, I'm sorry, I got all your mail, I apologize for being late. Well, yeah, we got some explaining to do. I don't think I can worship you based on some of the things I've read, but I can't doubt that you exist. Good job. Yeah, you proved to me that you exist.
Right.
I believe that you exist. I may not still be a Christian.
Sure.
But, hey, thank you for showing me. I'm no longer an atheist.
Right.
But considering he hasn't done that yet, I have no other compulsion then to maintain my position of this belief.
Yeah. How long have you been an atheist?
The theist claim that God exists.
How long have you been an atheist?
How long have I been an atheist? Let's see. So when I met you, I've only been probably out for maybe 3 years or so.
Yeah.
So
but
maybe
how long were you in the closet?
Year now?
Huh? I mean, total.
We might be 5 years in.
Oh, okay. A lot of people think that, I mean, probably people in the audience right now saying, well, you just didn't meet somebody who had the right explanation, who had the right evidence that you would accept. Or God is giving you evidence all the time, but you're just not accepting it. You were an atheist for 5 years. I assume you talked to a lot of Christians. Did you do that? Did you hear what they had to say?
So in this sense, I would say there's a lot of people I could talk to give me an impression of why their God's true.
Yeah.
And while I'm open to using my time wisely, I find it best to understand the reasoning behind why they say they believe in their God. And if they can show me a good reason for why I should believe in a God rather than just explain to me what their God can do, I would find that far more compelling.
I find that, yeah, and I don't find faith as an accurate or as a reliable means of determining what's true and not true, because I can't have faith in true things and not true things.
Yeah.
So why would I use faith as a marker for truth?
Right, and both of us were raised in Christian families, so we were raised growing up hearing the arguments. I was an atheist for, I guess, 45 years now. I was 22 when I came an atheist in college. And I'm 67 now, so that's 45 years. And I was in the closet for 30 years. I grew up in a Christian home. I was out of the closet for 17 years now. So I've heard and read.
And now you basically took over all of Kentucky with all your atheism.
Right.
How are you going to answer to God He brings you to the pearly gates and he says, listen.
Well, you gotta
close
remember.
Your heart to me? I've been trying so hard, and now you've turned so many people against me. Yeah, I can't forgive you for this.
Right. Well, a believer has to realize when we're talking to an atheist that they are representing their religion, and their religion may be Christianity or Islam or Hinduism, and you've got to convince us that yours is right. We know all the others are wrong. We even think yours is wrong, but you've got to give us a good explanation, and quite frankly, a good explanation doesn't do it. You've got to come up with proof. You've got to come up with evidence. Now, I've had people ask me, what would it take for you to believe? I mean, what evidence would you accept? And I thought about that for a while, but the best answer to that I heard was from Matt Dillahunty on The Atheist Experience. He said, I don't know what evidence would take to convince me that God was real, but God would know. He knows everything. And the fact that he has not chosen to show me that evidence, it goes a long way to show me that he's just not there. Because he wants me to know, doesn't he? He showed Paul.
Or that he couldn't care less.
On the road to Damascus.
Or that,
you know.
Right. Or that God couldn't care less, in which case, why should Matt care either way?
Or it may be some other God, or just a theistic God. In which case, you know, your religion is wrong, and God exists, but he's not. Doesn't have anything to do with you or mankind, period. It's just, you got to think about it from an atheist
God,
point of view. I'm sorry,
sure.
Go ahead.
If it is deistic God, as in a God that existed but no longer does exist, or it has died in some point, it's really hard to distinguish that evidence between that and a God that just never existed at all.
Right.
And the statement of, well, there needs to be a first cause of anything. It tends to be an assertion that there has to be a cause for everything, and that's one that hasn't been demonstrated, especially when your answer for that result or that conclusion is a God that himself doesn't have a cause. So what we're only looking for is a consistent answer, one that also doesn't fall apart to basic questioning. I find a lot of times when I get into like an epistemological conversation with someone where I'm asking them why they believe something, I can easily trap them in a statement where it's like, hey, you realize this is actually bad reasoning and they may not see it. So I'll ask them a certain line of questioning that basically reveals that this reason that you're using to believe something is not a good reason, but you can still believe it, but it's not a good reason that you're using. So try to just find a better reason, and then maybe that would convince you.
And
sometimes
they use reasons that could be used to justify any religion on the earth or a belief in any God.
They need to find a good reason. That's all I'm asking for, because that's what I need in order to join their belief.
Yeah.
But they will be angry that I broke down their reasoning for certain things.
They're living in a cocoon.
Because they've been using it for a while.
And
some,
they don't appreciate
some people would be really
putting
thankful.
Cheeks in it.
Exactly. Some people will be really, really thankful or of like, hey, that's really cool. But a lot of people are like, oh, that fundamentally makes me start to try to question stuff. You're trying to trick me. You're throwing trick questions at me. But I'm like, you can call it a trick question. I call it, for example, calling out BS.
Yeah.
If I can break down something with simple questioning, BS tends to be it. And the truth doesn't fear simple lines of questioning.
Yeah.
I can say, hey, Larry, your name's Larry. Is your name Larry? Can you prove your name's Larry? Yeah, and each time you can confidently demonstrate that your name is Larry and that you have a problem.
Birth certificate.
But as soon as you give me a different story, hey, maybe that falls apart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't like that. It makes them feel uncomfortable. But again, from our talk from earlier, just because something makes you feel uncomfortable, just because you don't like it, doesn't mean that it doesn't have a point. It doesn't mean that it can't be useful.
And you shouldn't be afraid to think about it. You shouldn't be afraid of the answer. If the answer is true, wouldn't you want to know the truth? I mean,
exactly.
How much do you want to? How much do you value truth? If you'd rather stay in your little cocoon and live a lie, well, we can't do anything about that. You know, a lot of people choose to do that. But how much do you value the truth?
Yeah,
you've got to be able to
answer
that
question. It's your prerogative to live however you want. But if you choose to value things that are true and you want to have beliefs that are true, you set up an expectation or set up some sort of limit for how much you're willing to accept wrong information and bad reasonings, and if someone can present them to you as a revealing fact that those are in fact bad reasons and those are in fact bad things that you're believing or incorrect things that you're believing, you should be thankful if you value the truth. If you don't value the truth, if you really don't care what you believe is true or wrong, then hey, you know, why are you even having this conversation with me? Go live on the Mars with your invisible oranges and zebras.
Yeah,
go on and
like
enjoy
you said,
the rest of your life.
Truth does not fear investigation. It welcomes it.
Truth doesn't fear investigation.
Right. We're coming up top of the hour. You have any last things you want to get into or last thing you want to say?
Sure. I can go into some things. There's some really great pictures of the eclipse. If you have a Facebook account, check them out. If you don't, there's going to be various websites that will have the solar eclipse from August 21st. Definitely recommend it. There's some really, really cool things that were done. I love what I talked to Nathan from our atheist group here down in Knoxville, and he had showed me this really cool thing that his wife had done. She had like a pegboard that had a bunch of holes cut into it, and he was shining it onto like a white cardboard piece of paper, and each of those holes shone a little eclipse inside of it. And I thought, that is the coolest thing! You would think the light diffracts so much from away from the sun all the way to the earth, but no, it acts as a pinhole lens, and that's amazing science.
Yeah.
Things I wouldn't even predict would have happened.
I was standing in a tree, standing on a sidewalk with
a
tree shadow was on the ground, and then the whole ground was just covered with little crescents. Because the little gaps between the leaves were acting as a pinhole, and it was just projecting little crescents all over the ground. I got a picture of that.
Cool.
I posted it on Facebook.
Well, yeah, great things all around, and thank you, science, for letting us know why. I should say thank you. But thank you, the thing that we as humans invented to develop a model that helped us figure out when that was going to happen so we wouldn't miss it and be absolutely prepared for it. Great job, guys. Everybody.
Right. Well,
listeners included.
Right. We're going to have to wrap it up. My final word, as usual, is everybody's going to somebody else's hell, and the time to fear that is when souls, heavens, and hells are proven to exist. Don't sweat it until you find that evidence. Mark Twain said, I was dead for millions of years before I was born, and I wasn't inconvenienced by it in the least. So, we'll see you next week at 7 o'clock every Wednesday at Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Dotter 5. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye!
And we'll see you next week.
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.